Hello, everyone. This is Bob Zeta. My amateur radio call sign is N1BLF, November 1, Bravo Lima Foxtrot. I'll be reading for you today, in digest format, the June 2010 issue of CQ Magazine. CQ is published by CQ Communications Incorporated, 25 New Bridge Road, Hicksville, New York, 11801. This recording is a production of the Courage Handy Ham System, 3915 Golden Valley Road, Golden Valley, Minnesota, 55422. It is for the use of eligible Handy Ham members only. Any other use may violate copyright laws. Handy Hams may be reached at area 763-520-0512 or at our email address, handyham@courage.org. Our website is www.handyham.org. So we'll begin today with ham radio news. Clear frequencies requested for China quake relief. Hams worldwide have been asked to keep 7.050 and 7.060 megahertz clear for emergency communications in the wake of China's second major earthquake in a year on April 13. According to the ARRL, the request came from the Chinese Radio Sports Association, which is coordinating ham radio activity in the relief efforts. Nearly 1,200 people were killed by the 7.1 magnitude quake in Qinghai province. Another 10,000 were hurt, and thousands of families were left homeless. Please check the CW website news page and other online news sources to see if this request is still in effect by the time you receive this issue. Let's go now to an FCC commentary. The FCC issues NPRM on proper use of ham radio in drills. Responding to three petitions for rulemaking, including one from CQ publisher CQ Communications Incorporated, the FCC in March issued a Notice of Proposed Rulemaking, NPRM, to try to clarify the question of hams providing communications, quoting, on behalf of an employer, close quote, during emergency drills. The NPRM proposes a narrow exception to the general prohibition that would be effective only during a government-sponsored emergency preparedness or disaster readiness test or drill, limited to the duration and scope of such test or drill, and operational testing immediately prior. That was also a quotation. It does not address drills by other agencies, such as hospitals, or other communications that are not related to emergency preparedness activities. The NPRM, at docket number WT-10-72, was published in the Federal Register on April 21, with a comment deadline of May 24. The ARRL request expanded call sign pool, including second numeral. The American Radio Relay League has asked the Federal Communications Commission to open up currently closed call sign blocks and to consider issuing ham call signs containing two digits rather than just one. Responding to an FCC proposal to limit clubs to a single license and call sign due to a shrinking number of available Group A calls, using the 1 times 2, 2 times 1, and 2 times 2 formats. The league said clubs often have more than one station and that the proposal would not end call sign abuse because it would not limit the number of clubs for which a single amateur could be trustee. According to the ARRL website, the league's proposed alternative is to have the Federal Communication Commission open up currently unused call sign blocks, including the entire NA through NZ, November Alpha through November Zulu group, and several previously reserved W groups, and to expand the number of Group A calls available by permitting the first character of the suffix to be a numeral rather than a letter, such as W223A, Whiskey 23 Alpha. The league also asks the FCC to re-examine in a future proceeding whether the public interest would be served by expanding the special event call sign pool beyond the currently available one-by-one format, such as K1A, Kilo 1 Alpha. Well, as we bump along here in Ham Radio News, here's one that to me looks like "We Told You So." This one is titled "Manassas." Does that give you a clue? Manassas pulls plug on BPL broadband over power line. The once highly touted and highly controversial broadband over power lines BPL system in Manassas, Virginia, will be taken offline as of July 1 of this year. The Washington Post reported in early April that the city council has voted unanimously to end the service and get out of the telecommunications business. BPL provides low price access to the internet via power lines, but at about one-fifth the speed of other broadband systems, but also produces a tremendous amount of interference on the high-frequency and low VHF frequency bands. The city of Manassas had assumed control of the network there in 2008 after a commercial provider pulled out. Its current subscriber base of 520 provided the city with about $156,000 a year in revenue, while the Post, that's the Washington Post newspaper, says running the system cost the city $170,000 a year. The Manassas system had been celebrated back in 2003 by former FCC Commissioner Michael Powell as, quoting, "the most successful BPL deployment in the nation," close quote, according to the ARRL, which fought the system repeatedly. The assessment now, according to one city council member, is that the business model just didn't work. The BPL equipment will be moved and the city will try to determine its salvage value, according to the ARRL website, which also quoted League CEO David Sumner, called K1ZZ, as saying that anyone thinking of investing in BPL would do well to learn from the Manassas experience. Well, our next commentary sounds intriguing. Pile up off the moon. It is about the longest DX currently possible, but the pileup for Moon Bounce, that's EME, or Earth Moon Earth contacts, is virtually unheard of, since very few ham stations are equipped for QSOs of nearly a half million miles in total distance. But when the huge radio telescope dish at the Arecibo Observatory in Puerto Rico was briefly turned into an EME antenna in mid-April, the wall of stations calling was simply incredible. According to prominent EME operator and Nobel laureate Joe Taylor, K1JT, in a posting on the Southgate Amateur Radio Club website on behalf of the entire KP4AO team, Taylor reported that the group completed approximately 240 contacts in 57 DXCC entities on 432 MHz in 8 hours on the air. He said that represented only about 20% of the stations calling on single sideband, 10% of potentially workable stations on CW, and only a few percent of those using his JT65 digital mode. "I guess we'll have to do it again in due course," he said. Taylor also asked anyone who worked or heard KP4AO with a station setup significantly smaller than that normally needed for Moon Bounce to please send him a short note with your station details. ARRL Red Cross signed new Memorandum of Understanding. After more than 2 years without a formal working relationship, the American Radio Relay League and American Red Cross have finally agreed on terms of a new Memorandum of Understanding that provides the structure under which the two groups will continue to work together. The previous agreement expired in 2007 and was not renewed due to HAM's opposition to a newly imposed Red Cross requirement that all of its volunteers undergo background checks. That included not only checks for criminal records, but credit reports and mode of living reports as well. Under the new arrangement, HAMs operating under the auspices of the ARRL's Amateur Radio Emergency Services, that's ARES, A-R-E-S, will not have to submit to credit, mode of living, or investigative consumer reports, according to the League. However, criminal background checks will still be required, which the agreement says that the ARRL volunteers may arrange at their own initiative and expense to have performed by a state or local enforcement agency. The full Red Cross background check is performed at no cost to the volunteer and may still be required if a ham wishes to become a Red Cross volunteer and expand his or her role beyond that of providing communications. Now, for you folks that do have internet capabilities, I'll read the very back part of this report on Ham Radio News. It says, additional and updated news is available on a Ham Radio News page of CQ website at http://www.cq-amateur-radio.com. For breaking news stories plus info on additional items of interest, sign up for CQ's free online newsletter service. Just click on CQ Newsletter on the home page of their website. Now's the time for Zero Bias, a CQ editorial by Rich Mawson, W2VU, editor of CQ Magazine. Get your hands into that. Ham radio and the democratization of technology. Step away from the technology. You are not smart enough to understand how it works or to try to fix it if it doesn't. This is the unspoken message from the people who build so many of today's technology tools and toys and warn us that there are no user serviceable parts inside or that opening case will void warranty. To some observers, it is also their bid to control what we do with technology, in much the same way that access to the tools of literacy and education were limited to a chosen few in the days before the invention of the printing press. It is also why ham radio's future is assured for at least another generation. Ham radio, in this scenario, is the 21st century version of movable type. Let me explain. A few days after Apple introduced its much-ballyhooed iPad digital reader, blogger and Make, it's M-A-K-E magazine columnist, Cory Doctorow posted a commentary on BoingBoing.net entitled, Why I Won't Buy an iPad and Think You Shouldn't Either. Personally, I don't care whether you buy an iPad, and I can't guarantee that I wouldn't eventually end up owning one. After all, I do own and enjoy an iPod. But Dr. O raises some very interesting points in his commentary, and while he doesn't specifically mention ham radio, what he says applies to us. Here's a quotation. Most of the really exciting stuff in technology, he writes, hasn't come from big corporations with enormous budgets. It's come from experimental amateurs. Writing about the iPad, he says, clearly there's a lot of thoughtfulness and smarts that went into the design, but there's also a palpable contempt for the owner. I believe, really believe, he continued, in the stirring words of the Maker Manifesto, if you can't open it, you don't own it. Screws, not glue. Dr. O goes on to note that the original Apple came with schematics for the circuit boards and birthed a generation of hardware and software hackers who upended the world for the better. By contrast, he says, the way you improve your iPad isn't to figure out how it works and make it better. The way you improve the iPad is to buy iApps. That's I-A-P-P-S. Buying an iPad for your kids isn't a means of jump-starting the realization that the world is yours to take apart and reassemble. It's a way of telling your offspring that even changing the batteries is something we have to leave to the professionals. Subsection. A solution. Well, we've got a solution to this dilemma. It's called ham radio. The spirit of figuring how it works and making it work better, or do something completely different, is so ingrained in our culture that it has even become part of the FCC rules that govern our operation, referencing Part 97.1 sub B. continuation and extension of the amateur's proven ability to contribute to the advancement of the radio art. Experimentation is not only permitted, it is encouraged. Hams are the only FCC licensees who, as a group, are permitted to build and modify their own gear and who are generally exempted from FCC equipment certification requirements. If you really want to learn how things work, to experiment with designing and building your own circuits, to play with technology rather than simply use it, ham radio is one of the few areas in which this is specifically allowed and encouraged, and where you can find a community of like-minded people to encourage, help, and guide you. This is a point that has been made repeatedly by the various military, technological, and scientific leaders whom we've interviewed on these pages over the past few years. If this country is to retain and or regain its leadership in technological innovation, then we must not only find ways to get young people interested in careers in science and technology, but we must also provide them with a playground in which they can tinker, try, fail, and ultimately succeed. In the 1970s and 80s, personal computers offered this opportunity, as Dr. Rowe noted. But since computers have become commodities and software has by and large become dominated by a few large companies, opportunities for experimenting in the world of computers have become very limited to non-existent, particularly for the individual operating outside of a structured corporate or academic environment. Ham radio, on the other hand, continues to provide a technological playground to those so inclined, as it has for more than a century. More importantly, it helps to keep access to the inner workings of technology more democratic, with a small d. Today, those who control our technology control large parts of our lives. Ham radio assures that at least some of that control remains with individuals. Now the subpart, a vital minority. Are we all out there on the cutting edge of technology? Certainly not. But I'm going to reveal a little secret here. We never have been. Since at least the 1950s, old-timers have been complaining that newer hams are turning into a bunch of appliance operators, with the possible exception of the earliest days of radio, when radio itself was experimental and therefore everyone involved in it was an experimenter. The majority of hams have been users of technology rather than its developers. But, and this is an important but, the minority who have been technological innovators have done some amazing things and are responsible for laying the groundwork for much of the technology we take for granted today. This is not something that has happened only in the good old days of ham radio, so-called golden age of the 1950s and 60s, when there were about a third as many licensed hams in the United States as there are today. Our minority of technological innovators continues to do amazing things. The hotbeds of technical innovation in ham radio today are among the QR peers and ham hikers, the digital developers such as K1JT, the software-defined radio experimenters in TAPR, the satellite designers in AMSAT, and the microwavers who are constantly pushing the envelope in terms of frequency and distance. For the rest of us, kits and home brewing are making a comeback. The smell of hot solder is still an integral part of our hobby. One of the reasons why neither CBs, nor cell phones, nor email, nor the internet have killed off ham radio, as so many had predicted that each one would as the decades passed, is that each of these has become a commodity with, quoting, no user serviceable parts inside, close quote. As long as ham radio offers the ability and the encouragement to open up a case, make your own repairs and modifications, or to design and build gear from scratch, we will continue to attract the technologically curious, and they will continue to keep ham radio safe for each succeeding future generation. Our challenge is to make sure that each new generation of the technologically curious knows about ham radio and what it offers. As a closing note, we'd like to welcome call N6GA, November 6, Golf Alpha. This issue contains the first column by our new QRP editor. QRP is Low Power Transmitting and Receiving. Cam Hartford, N6GA. Cam has big shoes to fill in succeeding Dave Ingram, call K4TWJ, who is now a silent key, having passed on. But I am very confident that he is up to the task. Please join me in welcoming Cam to our staff by reading and contributing to his column. 73 W2VU, Rich Mawson. I come now, folks, to the announcement section. I try to put it near to the beginning of the recordings for those that are interested. It's the special event listing that are scheduled for June, or at least some of them. Call N1M, November 1, Mike, from the 350th anniversary of the city of Marlborough, Massachusetts. Sponsored by the Algonquin ARC Amateur Radio Club, it's 0 through 2300 Zulu, June 25 to July 5, on all the various frequencies. The call, NC4ZO, November Charlie 4, Zulu Oscar, from North Carolina Aviation Museum, annual fly-in and warbird display, Asheboro, North Carolina. That's on June 5, on various frequencies. Special event call sign N6R, from commemoration of the lives of President Ronald and Mrs. Nancy Reagan. It's from the grounds of the Ronald Reagan Presidential Library and Museum, Simi Valley, California. It's put on by the Ventura County ARS, joined by Simi Settlers ARC, Ventura County ARC, and Conejo Valley ARC. It's on various frequencies. Special call K7P, Kilo 7 Papa, celebrating the 150th anniversary of the Pony Express from historic Riverbed Pony Express Station, Davis County ARC, Davis County, Utah. Several days involved there, June 12, 13, and 14. It's on 40, 20, and 15 meters, operating single sideband and PSK 31. KG8EF, Kilo Golf 8, Echo Foxtrot, from Edmund Fitzgerald Memorial Whitefish Point Lighthouse, which is USA 887, if you're chasing lighthouses, and Great Lakes Shipwreck Museum in Michigan's Upper Peninsula during Museum Ships Weekend, June 5 and 6. November Bravo 9, Quebec Victor, NB9QV, from Museum Ships Afloat Weekend, World War II Submarine USS Cobia, Manitowoc, Wisconsin, June 5 and 6. That's a busy weekend, huh? I hope some of you get to listen to these or chase them down on your tuners. And in Canada, Victor Echo 3 MIS, VE3 MIS, from annual Streetsville Bread and Honey Festival, Mississauga, Ontario, Canada. And that's on June 5 and 6. There are several hamfests also mentioned. Let's give you a quick rundown of those. On June 5, the 2010 Atlanta Hamfest. That's Jim R. Miller Park, Marietta, Georgia. On the 6th of June, Breeze Shooters Hamfest and Computer Show, Butler Farm Showgrounds, Butler, Pennsylvania. On June 12, Knoxville Hamfest Electronics Expo and ARRL Tennessee State Convention, Kerbella Temple, Knoxville, Tennessee. In Manassas, Virginia, the Manassas Hamfest, June 13, Prince William County Fairgrounds, Manassas, Virginia. Also on the 13th, HOSARC, H-O-S-A-R-C, Hamfest. That's Hall of Science, ARC, New York. Hall of Science parking lot, Flushing Meadow Corona Park in Queens, New York. Moving along to June 19, the special call W2QW, Whiskey 2 Quebec Whiskey, Hamfest, Piscataway High School, Piscataway, New Jersey. On the 20th of June, Flea Market at MIT, Albany and Main Streets in good old Cambridge, Massachusetts, a famous part of Boston, Massachusetts. An interesting note about the one here at MIT. This event is also held July 18, August 15, September 19, and October 20. So it's a great opportunity for people that are ham radio operators or aspiring to be, and who are traveling in the New England area. To catch one of these four dates at the Massachusetts Institute of Technology Flea Market, it's really very, very famous in this area for sure. Also on June 20th, the Monroe, Michigan Ham Fest, Monroe County Fairgrounds, Monroe, Michigan. And one more for June 25 through 27, Ham Radio Friedrichshafen, Germany. That's for those of you who are traveling abroad at this time of the year and are thinking of being in Germany on the 25th and 27th of June, if you're near Friedrichshafen. If you want more details on that one, you can go to www.hamradio-friedrichshafen.de. No, I'm not going to spell it out for you. You're on your own with this one. Folks, this particular issue, the June 2010 issue of CQ Magazine, starts off with a very, very interesting but rather lengthy article. It's titled A Quick Visit to China by the amateur called W5XKX/BY1RX, BY being the Chinese prefix. I can't read it for you because it's very lengthy and to some degree quite technical, but it certainly gives you an idea of what you can expect when you do some world traveling and try to mix in ham radio with it at the same time. The author of the article is Don Boudreau, B-O-U-D-R-E-A-U. His call is W5FKX. The long story with many beautiful photographs is published on pages 13 through 19 of June 2010 CQ. But just as a commentary relative to ham travel and tips for that, if you have travel plans and would like to consider meeting fellow hams on their own turf and perhaps operating from that destination, here are some tips to consider. In planning a trip, allow time for extracurricular activities. Even arranged tours usually include some free time. Review your log for potential contacts in areas that you will be visiting and inquire via email about a casual visit, perhaps for coffee or tea at a local cafe. Search the internet for club stations in those locations and contact the club station master to ask about the possibility of operating time during your visit. Review the information on international operating available on the ARRL website. That's really important too. Bring along a small gift as a token of appreciation. The suggestion here is CDs, DVDs, QSL, club insignias, etc. The author of this beautiful article, Don Boudreau, Whiskey 5 Fox Kilo X-Ray, thanks everyone involved in making it such a huge success and so enjoyable. What follows now are the results of the 2009 CQDX Marathon. The information is filed by John Sweeney, call K9EL. Despite 3% fewer countries being available in 2009 and sunspots still in hiding, the 2009 CQDX Marathon was anything but dull. Based on how close the scores were at the top of both classes, the 2009 DX Marathon was the most exciting yet. Participation was up 70% over 2008, so there were more participants chasing fewer countries. Logs were received from 320 stations in 48 countries and 23 CQ zones, all significantly more than the 2008 marathon. Club competition was noticeably up this time, especially in Brazil, where DX marathon participation was up over 500% from 2008. Once again, we are especially thankful to all those who participated in the marathon for the first time. The lack of DX, long-distance communications, and sunspots did not affect the formula class scores too much, with average scores only 3% less than in 2008, exactly matching the available country reduction. Approximately 70% of all logs submitted were in the unlimited class, where average scores were down 10%, yet only 2 points separated the next five stations after the unlimited class winner. Competition in top class was indeed fierce. Missing one country can quickly move an operator down the list. As participation expands in the DX Marathon, unique competitions are developing. For 2009, there were 10 CW-only submissions, that's Morse code, and 29 SSB-only scores, single sideband. both significant increases over previous years. Whiskey 4 Victor Quebec, W4VQ, the previous top CW scorer, increased his score by 6 points, yet was 1 point short of the top CW score of 299, submitted by W1JR. The top single sideband score of 284 was also higher than the 2008 and was submitted by W4JS. CW clearly is not dead. Call W8QCA once again held the top spot for the low-power QRP 10 watts or less group. The low bands proved popular, with K5NQ submitting an 80-meter-only score of 238, working 199 countries and 39 zones, only missing zone 34. For the DX Marathon Unlimited, the winning score of 321 points for 2009 was a total of 281 countries, slant 40 zones, and was accomplished by W9KNI from his Oregon QTH, or geographic location. Who says contests can't be won from the West Coast, huh? In 2008, Bob tied the winner in terms of points, but lost out, as the date of his last country was later than that of the winner, OM3EY. The article goes on for quite a bit further with a lot of more detail, but I won't bore you with that. Not that it's necessarily boring to those that are very much interested in it. But if you need some extra points for 2010 in the marathon, don't forget that the CQ countries list includes additional valid countries that are not part of the ARRLDXCC program. You just have to dig in and keep trying, I guess is the theme here. And good luck with that, too, for our listeners, especially new ones into amateur radio. Those of you who haven't yet really gotten your teeth into DXing and other interesting aspects of amateur radio. Give yourself a chance. It takes a little time, believe me. I have here a book review, a CQ book review. The World of Ham Radio, 1901-1950. A Social History. The author, Richard A. Bartlett. The reviewer here is William Kalo, W-A-8-F-O-Z. Social historian Richard Bartlett, the brother of the late Forrest Bartlett, called W6OWP, well known for his code practice transmissions, has put his professional skills to work in trying to explain what makes hams tick. This wonderful book is the third in this decade about amateur radio written for a general readership. The first of these was the joyous and idiosyncratic Hello World, A Life in Ham Radio by Danny Gregory and Paul Scherer. The second was Kristen Herring's work of social anthropology, Ham Radio's Technical Culture, which was well regarded by the academic community but seen as dark and incomplete by many hams. In a review of Herring's book, I suggested that these two works in combination might provide a broad introduction to our sublime hobby and unique culture. The World of Ham Radio, 1901-1950, also does just that, and in many ways transcendent. These books all were written by people who encountered ham radio through personal connections. Gregory and Cher met Jerry Powell, W2OJW, after his death through his collection of QSL cards. Herring has family members in amateur radio. The author of The World of Ham Radio, 1901-1950, Richard A. Bartlett, is not an amateur, but came to know of us through his elder brother, the late Forrest Bart Bartlett, W6OWP. His devotion to his brother pervades the book as it describes Bart's career in parallel with the development of amateur radio. Bart was an expert CW operator, remembered for his code practice and the West Coast qualifying run transmissions, as well as his pioneering work in RTTY. Richard Bartlett is a professor emeritus at Florida State University, a distinguished social historian, and an international authority on the history of the American West. As a social historian, in this book he brings together both the personal interactions and the societal phenomena that marked the development of amateur radio. His scholarly credentials are immense, and this very heavily referenced work attests to his academic rigor. At the same time, his personal interaction with amateur radio and with his brother makes this book a vivid, deeply personal, and very readable work. As an academic, I stand in awe of this achievement. This is not to say that the world of ham radio, 1901-1950, is light reading. I found it necessary to take on this book in parts, no more than a chapter at a time, because of its rich content. At the same time, I eagerly returned to it at any opportunity. Bartlett chose to cover the period from 1901, the very beginning of radio, to 1950. There is a brief appendix covering recent events. Why did he stop there? He asserts that by that time, the social structure of amateur radio and its place in our society had largely been consolidated. In other words, the changes that came since 1950 have involved technology more than our ways of interacting. One could quibble a bit with this, given the increase in the number of women amateurs and the styles of operating brought about by repeaters and digital modes. But in general, I agree. Today, an operator from 1950 might be buckled by Digipan, but would be perfectly at home on CW at 7010 kHz or AM, that's amplitude modulation, on 3885. This is a book of 15 chapters plus appendices, with both copious footnotes and exhaustive supplementary references. The first chapter, The Beginnings, is a gem. I especially enjoyed Surviving the Broadcast Revolution, an account of our struggle for survival and eventual triumph in the 1920s. Several chapters on amateur radio in land, sea, and polar expeditions were fascinating. We came to be regarded as innovators and heroes, and we have basked in this recognition. It is important to remember that such high regard must constantly be replenished through experimentation and service. This book will appeal to experienced amateurs and anyone interested in our hobby. I would especially commend it to the newbies, whom I regard as a welcome and long overdue addition to our hobby. Overall, it is a blessing that one now can enter amateur radio rapidly, but many new hams have missed the acculturation that resulted from longer periods of entry that was once required. An admired colleague says, "Ham radio is something you do, not something you buy." I would go a step further and say that ham radio is something that we are. This book will allow newcomers to understand what that something is and how it came to be. I believe that amateurs grow by learning not only technology, but also culture. I also believe that this book presents an implicit challenge. While I agree that the social status of ham radio has remained stable over the last 50 years, I am quite certain that it will change in the years to come. While changes will be stimulated by outside social forces and technology, ultimately we will be responsible for the form of our service. Historians remind us that we must know our past in order to successfully negotiate the future. This, therefore, is a book for the ages. Now, for my listener, I'll conclude with the information on how you might acquire this book. The World of Ham Radio, 1901-1950, A Social History, is published by McFarland and Company, Jefferson, North Carolina. The list price is $55. Here's an announcement. The 2010 CQ Worldwide VHF Very High Frequency Contest. It starts 1800 UTC, Saturday, July 17, 2010, and ends 2100 UTC, Sunday, July 18, 2010. The contest period, 27 hours for all stations, all categories. Operate any portion of the contest period you wish. The objectives of this contest are for amateurs around the world to contact as many amateurs as possible in the contest period, to promote VHF, to allow VHF operators the opportunity to experience the enhanced propagation available at this time of the year, and for interested amateurs to collect VHF Maidenhead grid locations for awards credit. Now, regarding the bands, all authorized amateur radio frequencies on 50 megahertz, that's 6 meters, and 144 megahertz, 2 meters, may be used as authorized by local law and license class. There are a lot more details about that, but with any contest, you have to go through a lot of details. It begins on page 46 and concludes on page 47 of the June 2010 CQ magazine. Moving forward, I come to Washington Readout. The author here is Frederick O. Maia, spelled M-A-I-A, called W-5-Y-I, Whiskey 5 Yankee India. The title of this major piece is FCC Sends National Broadband Plan to Congress. This is really an interesting piece, folks. It's just so long, but yet really critical to anybody that's seriously interested in what's going on with the government relative to amateur radio, etc. Unfortunately, I just don't have the time to put really good things like this into an hour broadcast. We're right at 41 minutes now, so I'm only good for another 18 minutes or so. This would probably take 30 minutes all by itself. It begins on page 52 and concludes on page 57. I'm just going to give you a sense of what it's about. That's not really fair, I know, but that's about the best I can do. The commentary here is by the author Frederick O. Maia, W-5-Y-I. Ham radio began more than a century ago as an analog Morse code AM service. Over the decades, newer modes and emissions emerged: AM voice, FM, single sideband, television, satellite, spread spectrum, and others. The progress in amateur radio technology pretty much mimics that of commercial communications today. Like the rest of the world, the amateur radio service is going digital. The most technological advance during our lifetime is the marriage of the personal computer and the internet, and both have become an important part of ham radio. You can even use your PC to access web-controlled radio receivers and virtual amateur transceivers. As a matter of fact, as an aside, folks, the Courage Anyhem system does that with this station located in the Lakes Country of Minnesota for members of the Courage Anyhem system. Internet-connected people worldwide can conduct real-time voice QSOs almost as easily as talking on a telephone. Echolink VOIP software allows licensed amateur radio stations to directly communicate over the internet using streaming audio technology. Repeaters and RF gateways linked over the internet can extend communications range to unimaginable distances. Getting the full benefit of these internet-based resources requires a broadband connection to the internet, and that is one of the reasons why the Federal Communications Commission's new National Broadband Plan is important to hams and ham radio. The article goes on to elaborate in great detail about what the FCC is proposing. So if you're seriously interested in finding out more about what your future with amateur radio is, it would behoove you to get this information into your brain and start churning it around a little bit. I can only sincerely suggest that those of you who are print impaired in your reading abilities get in touch with another amateur radio operator in your local community, or perhaps eventually the communications people at the Courage Anyhem system, so that you can find out more as to how to enjoy this new hobby that you're trying to take on with amateur radio. Now for change of pace, Kids Corner by Brittany Decker, call KB1OGL, The Teen Radio Journey. Reading through my mail a while back, I was going through the motions of sorting it into piles: band, college, bank, SAT prep, bank. Then I came across something that certainly broke the monotony. It was a letter from 13-year-old Paul Sheary, S-H-I-R-E-Y, with no call sign, from Peoria Heights, Illinois. It had a letterhead and everything and was perfectly constructed, showing how articulate a kid he was. He expressed that he might be doing something of interest to me, podcasting about amateur radio. Certainly I was interested in this, as I had never really heard of using any kind of blogging or podcasting website, in parenthesis, kind of in the category of Facebook, MySpace, Twitter, etc., for amateur radio purposes. It was a good idea. It was yet another example of meeting young hams on their own turf. Bravo. I found my own words of advice being put into practice in a way I hadn't thought of. I had to hear more from this Paul Sheary. I had to get onto his website and listen to what he had to say. I made sure to go to the very first episodes that he recorded and then work my way to the newer ones. I was genuinely interested in hearing his climb to attaining his license and call sign, and then hearing about his activities and interests after that. His website was also very well put together and easily accessible, which, to my amazement, I found out he constructed with no outside help. I then proceeded to email him, for this was truly the type of person I wanted to interview. I was not disappointed, and I am sure he will not be either, at the promise that Paul shows to the growth of the hobby. Here is what Paul had to say. I'm Paul Sheary, KC9QYB. The way I became interested in amateur radio in the summer of 2009 was by listening to amateur radio podcasts, such as the Practical Amateur Radio Podcast. It later came to my mind that I wanted to start my own podcast. Money was tight, and I did not know how I was going to be able to produce a good podcast on an extremely tight budget. I found some free hosting available and founded the very first Teen Radio Journey on a basic subdomain webpage. I purchased a cheap basic plug-and-play microphone for the podcast and released Teen Radio Journey Episode 1 on August 5, 2009. When I founded Teen Radio Journey, I did not have an amateur radio license. In episodes 1 through 7, I talked about experiences I was having with studying for the test. Then, on November 14, 2009, I took my technician class amateur radio exam, and lo and behold, I passed. On November 19, I was officially licensed as Kilo Charlie 9, Quebec Yankee Bravo, KC9QYB. All the episodes from number 8 on, I have produced as a licensed U.S. amateur radio operator. What inspired me to continue to produce episodes of the podcast and share my journey with around 500 listeners? My goal with this podcast is that I can not only inspire people older than me to get licensed, but even inspire people my age and younger to get an amateur radio license if this is something that truly interests them. I really enjoy producing this podcast and sharing the joy and amazement of the hobby with everyone else. The amateur radio community has been very generous in helping me keep the podcast going. If it weren't for the support of people such as Jerry Taylor, KD0BIK, of the Practical Amateur Radio Podcast, the podcast either would not be around anymore or would be on an extremely low website and take a very long time for episodes to download. Jerry Taylor not only is sharing his server space with me, but he also bought me a brand new Plantronics USB headset to use to record episodes. I get this warm feeling knowing that I am using my podcast to Elmer people, and that I can use it as a way to get more and more people interested in this wonderful hobby of amateur radio, telling them about all the fantastic things they can enjoy by getting licensed. I also plan to conduct some interviews with amateurs who have been in the hobby for a long time and have them help me and other new amateurs see how much the hobby has changed and enhanced their lives. I really did not find anything challenging when I studied for the test. I was a little overwhelmed to begin with, but then Jerry, KD0BIK, sent me the Gordon West Technician Class study materials, and this helped me not to be so overwhelmed. Once I really started to study, I realized that most of the stuff that I had to learn was either common sense or material with which I had already become familiar. It did take me a little while to understand the electrical theory behind it, but that was about it. I think that we all, as amateurs, have a job to ensure that the hobby survives in the future. I do not think that amateur radio is dying. I have heard this phrase used by a lot of people, but I continue to see the number of amateur radio operators go up. In fact, just about a month ago, our governor signed a bill that would bring RACES, R-A-C-E-S, back to Illinois. In his letter, he stated that he realizes that Illinois has a true need for the vast community of experienced amateur radio operators to be available in an emergency situation. Our club has started a licensing class, and there has been a good turnout. This is also a sign that the hobby is not dying, but growing. I believe that if the majority of the public hasn't realized the importance of amateur radio operators, they will soon enough. After Hurricane Katrina, amateur radio operators were one of the first responders, and this was also true for the disaster in Haiti earlier this year, and all of the other serious natural disasters or terrorist acts, such as 9/11. Amateur radio plays an important role in the safety and well-being of the general public. I continue now with Brittany's commentary. When Paul first began his blog, his episodes were a little bit slow. However, this is not to give them any less importance or praise. After all, it must be pretty hard to find material to put on a podcast when you are just starting out in a hobby and you don't have many personal experiences or a huge circle of amateur radio friends to rely on for interviews. Therefore, Paul decided to rely on one he knows. He did an interview with one of his amateur radio friends, Phil Mayer, KC2TPY, and managed to get about 9 minutes of podcast from that. He asked some good questions during the interview, and overall it was an interesting podcast. Further on, between his blogging and podcasting, he tells of technical problems he faces and how they might make running the podcast a little bit harder, but he manages to keep up with it. Currently, he is building a studio so that he will be able to conduct interviews more efficiently. One of the main hurdles Paul had blogged and podcasted about was getting his license. It turned out, as he said before, to be all nerves. He stated that once you get down to studying, it is not all that scary, and just as I said to my own father when studying for my two exams, it is mostly common sense. However, there is a technical aspect to it that is a little daunting. However, it is nothing that a bit of determination and a cup of coffee can't solve. In addition to his blogging and podcasts, Paul is starting to get interested in the many other amateur radio activities that are available. He is a member of the Peoria Area Amateur Radio Club, a net control operator for its WNIUVI Sunday Night Net, attends almost every meeting, and is currently using the club loan Kenwood TS930S transceiver. On the contesting side of the fence, Paul has participated in Skyhorn Recognition Day and Kids Day. He also plans on participating in the ARRL Rookie Roundup, along with being a GOTA, that's Get On The Air, station operator at this month's ARRL Field Day. This brings a smile to my face, because first, I myself operated a GOTA station at Field Day, and second, when listening to his early podcast, Paul stated that he hoped to accomplish this someday in the future. Paul has also been thinking of getting more involved in organizations such as AFRIS and Skywarn, but is not affiliated yet. He hopes to get involved in Skywarn Storm Spotters once he can drive and is aware that there is a training class going on in his area. Looking back at Paul's previous podcasts, when he had little to no equipment, it is amazing to see how his possessions and affiliation with the hobby have grown. We're quoting him here. I have an Elanco DJ175T 2-meter handheld and a Kenwood TS930S along with a Tentect Omni DV3. He notes, for antennas, I have a J-pole for my HD, a 10-meter dipole, a stock rubber duck antenna for my HD, and a Comet SR877C aftermarket antenna for my HD. I also have a handmade coax feed-through panel. Coming from a humble start, Paul has taken considerable initiative in getting involved in amateur radio and has grown immensely as an operator. One last activity that Paul told me about that really, truly piqued my interest was the fact that he was writing a book. When he first wrote a letter to me about his activities, he came off as a very articulate 13-year-old kid, now 14, and now it is no surprise that Paul Sheary is writing a book. On what, you ask? On amateur radio, of course. Quoting again, I am currently working on a book called How to Get Started in Amateur Radio for Kids and Young Adults. That's the title. That I hope to release soon, Paul explained. It will talk about all the various methods that are available to study for amateur radio exams. It all depends on what works best for each individual. This am is sure to be one who will continue to contribute to the amateur radio community for many years to come. He closed our interview by saying, if someone out there is interested in amateur radio and has no license and no Elmers to help, I would be more than glad to be the Elmer. You can contact me by sending an email to lowercase kc9qyb at arrl.net. Also, be sure to visit Paul Sheary's website at www.teenradiojourney.com, Teen Radio Journey, one word, and give some feedback. He will appreciate it greatly. The article is signed 73 Brittany, KB1OGL. Ladies and gentlemen, that just about brings me up to time for this month's digest format reading of CQ Magazine for June 2010. CQ is a publication of CQ Communications Incorporated, 25 Newbridge Road, Hicksville, New York, 11801. Your reader, my name is Bob Zeida, spelled Z-E-I-D-A. My call is N1BLF, November 1, Bravo Lima Foxtrot. My QTH or geographic location is Dartmouth, Massachusetts, right near Buzzards Bay, as you head along the road to Cape Cod. If any of you listeners would like to contact me via email, my email is my call sign N1BLF at comcast.net. This recording is a production of the Courage Handy Ham System, 3915 Golden Valley Road, Golden Valley, Minnesota, 55422. It is for the use of eligible Handy Ham members only. Any other use may violate copyright laws. Handy Hams can be reached at area 763-520-0512 or at email address handyham@courage.org. Handy Ham is one word, H-A-N-D-I-H-A-M, lowercase, at courage.org. Wonderful website, updated continuously, www.handyham.org. Again, thanks a lot for listening along to CQ Magazine, June 2010, here on the Courage Handy Ham System. Bob Zeida, N1BLF, 73.